Okay. Can you even believe it? It's another episode of People Pleaser, the podcast that you're listening to. I really wanted to get this episode up before the end of June, before the end of Pride Month. I got the video version on YouTube before the end of Pride Month. We did it on Tuesday this week, and I've just been dragging my feet and procrastinating getting the audio version out. It is right now 11:18 p.m. on Friday, June 30th in California. So I'm recording this still with 40 minutes to spare on where I am in the time zone matrix on Pride Month, but more or less this is a good. I think that the window has been met. I think for this to be a Pride Month episode, even though like we're talking about Pride, but really we're talking about sort of this concept. My guest this week, obviously, if you clicked on it, you saw the title of the episode, "Wildly Unreasonable" with Don Martin. Don Martin is a person I discovered on TikTok. I really like his videos. He makes a lot of great videos, just about his experience. As a gay man and kind of talking to people who have their, they're just asking questions, they have their reasonable concerns and things like that. And he sort of coined this phrase with one of his videos where he said, I'm under no obligation to behave in a way that appears reasonable to you. I am not a reasonable person. I'm wildly unreasonable. And just basically talking about like, kind of responding to people's respectability politics when it comes to, you know, queer pride and things like that. And I've actually made a whole entire video on YouTube. I'm making YouTube exclusive videos now, videos that only appear on YouTube. And I've made two of them now, and my second one just came out this last week, and it's called "The Nauseating Respectability Politics of Conservatives," and it's about this topic. This topic of, you know, conservative people saying, I just wish that, you know, this or that marginalized group would just behave in a more reasonable way. And, you know, when we're discussing the topic of a group fighting for, you know, more equitable circumstances in society, fighting for representation, fighting to be seen, fighting to be respected, fighting for dignity, and you're asking them to be more quote-unquote reasonable in that fight, we'll offer you the dignity, we'll offer you the respect that you seek, we'll offer you the equity that you think that you are due if you behave in a more reasonable way. And it's like, who gets to decide what's reasonable and what's unreasonable, and whose standard of reasonability are we trying to meet? And usually we're trying to meet the standard of reasonability set by the oppressor or the oppressors. Those are the people that are saying, oh, I'll be nicer to you if you'll just meet this arbitrary standard of reasonability. And, you know, I mean, yeah, so we're talking about that. I think that Don Martin is perfectly justified in saying I don't want to meet that particular standard of reasonability. When it comes to that particular standard of reasonability, I intend to be wildly unreasonable. So that's what we're talking about this week on the show. In 40 minutes, it'll be my sober birthday, July 1st. This day, June 30th, 2018, was the last time I got drunk. Crazy. 2018. That's wild. It doesn't seem that long ago, but here we are. 5 years. 5 years. And I got drunk, dude. There's episodes about it. There's an episode, I think, at my 2-year anniversary that I did on this podcast. There's an episode called Alcohol that I did in, like, the first year of this podcast. That you can listen to where I talk about it. I recount the story. But yeah, that last night, June 30th, 2018, I got toasty. And then, yeah, July 1st was day one. Day one. And here we are all these years, all these days later. I think I'm going to keep it going if I can for a while longer. Yeah, I really like Don. I'm glad that I met him. I'm glad that I encountered him on the internet. I'm back from doing the movie. I don't know if I mentioned that last week on the podcast. Did I mention that? Did I say that? I'm back. We're done. Movie 2 is in the can. There was an article that just came out on Variety announcing me in the movie, and it said TikTok star Austin Archer joins the cast of Kevin Costner's epic Horizon series. And this happened in a whirlwind. I got a call from my agent on on Thursday night saying, hey, Variety wants to talk to you about this article. And so I said, you know, give them my information. And the guy was like, I need to talk to you tomorrow morning because I want to put this article out really fast. And so he called me like 8 a.m. today, Friday. We talked for a little bit on the phone, and then in like 2 hours, the article was up. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I think I just assumed, because I'm still kind of like a, I'm still kind of a small fish in the entertainment industry. I don't have like a publicist. I don't have a publicity team, and I don't have like LA representation. I don't have like an LA manager or agent that are communicating with the production office for these movies. And so I guess I just assumed that if it was a Variety article, that Variety had permission from our production office to do these pieces. And I get a call from Horizon's publicist yesterday, and she's like, what the fuck? Because apparently I wasn't supposed to do that. She was like, no, I've told all the actors I've told everyone's publicity teams that we're not doing press releases yet for these movies. So all of these other actors, their publicists are calling me right now saying, what's with this actor being in Variety? So I guess I beat everyone to the punch there. Didn't mean to. But it's too late now. At least the article was, she was like, well, at least the article's positive. And I didn't spill any major beans. I didn't like drop any huge plot points or anything like that. And I said really nice things about the movies and about Kevin. So, oh boy, whatever. Let's do it, right? Right? Let's do it. Let's get into it. Hope everybody had a happy Pride Month. Hope you're having a nice summer. Hope things are going well in your life right now. Let's get into it. Let's go. Let's do it. Here we go. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my new friend, Don Martin, about being wildly unreasonable. Oh my God, YouTube and Spotify and Apple Podcasts or wherever you are. We got Don Martin. Hi, Don.
Hi, Austin. Thank you for having me in your studio today. I'm so glad that we can make this happen. We flew to one another and we are in the same room.
It's right now. Yeah, the room looks very different on both sides.
Yeah, very different. The lighting is different. I was really impressed though. You have great staff. I appreciated the spa water I got upon entry.
Happy Pride to you.
Happy Pride. Thank you.
And happy anniversary.
Oh, yeah. It's my wedding anniversary today.
Oh, my God.
And I'm spending it here with you as I dreamt.
That's great. Your husband was like, what are we doing for our anniversary? And you're like, I'm going on Austin Archer's podcast.
I'm going on a podcast. Yeah. He's like, of course you are. Of course you are. That's your whole thing. Good. Like, I'm gonna go away.
This is going really well. I love you very much. Bye.
Yeah. We've got double sink. Other people have double sinks. We just have like double hobbies. It's great. You should try it sometime.
Do you have plans? Are you gonna go to dinner or something? Are you gonna do anything?
We've said the word boba to each other like a million times. I don't know. It's really gross. So I'm in Chicago and like, we're getting our share of the Canadian wildfires today. Yeah. So like the world is very brown outside. So I'm not sure how much like going out we're actually going to end up doing tonight, but maybe.
Does it have you feeling pretty dystopian? Do you feel like you're looking outside going, uh-oh, I've got maybe 20 years left on this planet?
No,
or?
But it is. Well, I mean, I kind of always feel like that. But I mean, it's actually giving more like The Others, that Nicole Kidman movie. Like that's the energy that outside is giving right now. So I'm kind of waiting for like a Victorian child to show up and tell me that actually I've been dead the whole time.
Yeah, someone's doing a seance in your living room and trying to get you out of the house.
I'm a ghost, yeah. Mm-hmm.
How often do people talk about the fact that your name is very close to Doc Martin?
I got that in high school a lot, back when Doc Martens were a huge deal. Mm-hmm. I also was a band kid, theater kid, so I got Dean Martin a lot. I will say it is kind of nice because I have a little bit of like Google cover. Like it's not as easy to Google me because the very famous Mad Magazine illustrator is also named Don Martin. So when you Google my name, that is all you get is vintage Mad Magazine illustrations, which is
great.
But
do you want that as a writer and as a public person?
I think I'm good. I mean, I used to be like, you know, I've been doing this a long time. Why can't people Google me? And now I'm like, that's okay. It's fine. People are crazy. People are nuts.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, like if you Google like Don Martin author or Don Martin, you know, a thing that I do, then of course I show up. But like, if you just Google my name, you get a comic illustrator, and I kind of love that. It's great.
Have you done anything fun this month? Do you and your husband do much? I know some like couples who have been together for a very long time. Like it's like Pride Month is almost like a young person's game where you're like, I did it. I did the parades. Do you go out? Do you go to Chicago Pride? Do you celebrate?
We actually had. I ruined our plans. So we had plans to go do Pride on Sunday. But I also have a podcast. It's called Head on Fire. It's great. You should listen to it. But I had just done an interview with David Archuleta, and I got that audio back, and part of it had corrupted.
Oh God.
And it was really bad. And he was, I told him, I was like, hey, I just wanted to let you know, like, the interview, you sound great. Your answers are great. This is going to be great. I do just want to apologize in advance because it does sound like we are talking to each other through a wet washcloth, like giving like the worst, like just the worst drunk voicemail at 2 a.m. on a Saturday you've ever heard. And he's like, we can just do it again. And I was like, oh, David Archadorable, I'm so thankful. So I did have to give up my Sunday. I didn't get to go to Pride. So we did Pride at home. And I bought a bunch of rainbow stuff and we sat at home and we binge watched Glamorous and we cheers each other with like rainbow wine and all of that. But we like to go to the parade. Back before the Panini, I had a corporate job downtown. And I was a very active part of Pride. I mean, June was every day I was staying late. Every day I was out till, you know, 10 p.m. at night doing this event or that event or drag brunch or this or that or the other. So I really do. I love it. I mean, I like to be a part of it.
When I was in my 20s, I partied hard in Pride.
Oh, see, I can't do the
like,
parties.
I partied hard. Like, I was like, oh, but I also like am a recovering alcoholic who like would take any excuse to be drunk all day long.
I'd sure.
Like, well, I'm going to go to the parade and I'm going to be drunk all day.
I will say, nothing makes you feel like a solid, 4.5 on a best day, like going to Pride. Like, you go to Pride. And you have to have, your ego has to be, your self-image has to be in check because you go to Chicago Pride and you go to any of those bars. And that is just, that's where it gets to be a young person's game. A young person who is just, you know, they think that they are the hottest human being on the planet. So you just have to like walk in and just really be fine with your spirit.
Yeah, but Don, you're so hot. Like every time I come across one of your videos, I'm like, oh, Don's so fucking hot. Like with your like gym shirts and shit. Is that, I mean, I guess that's a thing in the gay community is that like everyone's like really hot. And then like, you're like, okay, I got to really compete with the extra hotness. I'm out here with like straight guys who are like dating like women that are just like so much hotter than them all the time. And I'm like, well, if that guy's got a girlfriend, I can get a girlfriend. Like,
it's very sweet. But like I said, something about it's not, I mean, like I feel like I've got a pretty healthy sense of self-confidence. But something about going to Pride, you see, it's like people crawled off Mount Olympus to come down here and you're just like, oh, I don't. That's not, there is a difference. And, yeah. and the difference is vast between them and me. And I'm okay with it. You do have to get that ego just like solid and in check, or else you are going to come home and you're just going to cry.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always dated out of my league as a straight man because that's just like what like straight women are yoked with is just like, you got to sort of just like the hottest straight guys are like the worst guys. And so it's like, you got to like,
you know? I just think, I don't know that that's a straight thing. I feel like that's just a men thing. That's just men. That's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
You can have some real pretty ones and they're just jerks. I don't know. Ew, men are gross.
Yeah.
This episode is called Men Are Terrible with Don Martin. Welcome to Men Are Terrible. Hi, welcome to my new podcast, Men Are Terrible.
It's hosted by two
white men.
Two white men.
Two white men.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We are awful because.
Yeah. Oh my God. I didn't get to go to anything this year. I was out, I was working all June and I didn't get to go to like any events. I was down in Moab, Utah, which has, I've heard, like a pretty like small but fierce pride that mm-hmm. they do. And it happened on some Friday or Saturday and I was working and I didn't get to go, but you know.
Yeah. The last pride I was at a couple years back and this year apparently as well, rained out. I was supposed to be in it, you know, like I said, I had a corporate job. So yay, corporate people at Pride. But I was going to be in the parade and it just, oh my God, it was just such a deluge. We didn't even get to walk the parade. We just stood there and just were drenched. And the problem is, since we never actually got to walk the parade, we were all the way up at the start of the parade and all of our cars and all of our way out and everything was at the end of the parade. So we still had to get there. Mm-hmm. So we had to walk like, you know, an hour in the rain.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have one more like stupid question before we get into the real.
There's no such thing parting. As stupid questions, only ugly faces. No kidding. I don't even know what that was. There's a t-shirt.
That's new Don Martin merch dropping
Thank
soon.
You.
There's no such thing as a stupid question. My friend and I used to say this to each other all the time. We would like if someone was like, that was a really stupid thing that I said, we would go, you're not stupid, you're sexy. It's like it has nothing to do with like, you know, like you're not
it's
stupid.
Like, oh, at you're least sexy. You're pretty. And it's like, thank you. I know what you're saying. Thank you so much. Thank you.
I watched a video today where you were talking about getting a shirt. You went to Target to get, and I do want to talk about rainbow capitalism because that's kind of what this video is about. And you were just talking about having a corporate job and like having to like go do like the corporate pride thing. And that will be something that I want to come back to. But this question's not about rainbow capitalism. This question's just about my interest in your shirt size, because you cut a lot of like gym shirts that you wear in your videos and stuff. Uh-huh. But you're like a, not only are you super hot, you're a buffman too. Like you've like got like a nice body and like, but you were talking about how like a large was too big on you. And I was like, wait, do you wear a smaller medium normally? Or do you wear, cause I wear a large.
God, this can make me sound like such a tool. So my shoulder to waist ratio.
You're very svelte.
Means that my shoulder size is one size and my waist size is a different size. So if I'm buying like a tank top, you mm-hmm. can buy a size down. And if you're buying something else, you buy a size up. But like if I'm just buying a shirt and I know I'm going to cut it up to wear at the gym, I'll usually go like a couple of sizes up. That way, whenever you wash and dry it, it doesn't like become like a mankini, and then suddenly the boys are out or something. Wait, that sounds.
But you kind of like
that
a little
like my no, something else hangs out.
You rock a little side boob. You like a little side boob.
Oh yeah, well yeah,
yeah.
Like I worked little, really hard for that.
You
so,
gotta,
yeah.
You gotta get that line.
It's just,
people
it's
can't.
Just, it's just right there. It's just the right, just the tiniest, just the littlest bit of that. You gotta.
We're just missing the nip. It's just.
Yep. You got, it's just right across there. But that's the thing, is you have to get the correct original size shirt, and you have to know where to cut it so that when it washes and dries and shrinks up and curls in a little bit, it still just goes right over the edge. So you're not in violation of Instagram's no nipple policy.
I just needed to know because I'm planning on reshaping my body this year. I'm going to get chiseled and jacked.
I mean,
I needed to know what shirts I should be looking for.
What people think I look like, if you ever find my socials and like go back far enough, that is like what people think I look like is not what I looked like a few years ago. Like I used to have a horrible, horrible job where I was working 85 hours a week and I was eating nothing but junk and garbage. And I was about 40, 45 pounds heavier than I am now, and like all the places that I did not want to be that size. And I did not look like this. So it was a long road to what I, when I finally left that job, I was like, you know what? Whatever my next job is, I'm going to prioritize. I'm going to take the time to make sure that I'm putting stuff in my body that honors my body. And I'm going to make sure that I'm giving myself time to just go exercise, like just go do something for my brain and my body. And that has become a time when it's just like, I get all my best ideas. I'll get a great idea for the next chapter I'm working on, or I'll, I come up with a question list for my next interview or something like that. Like while I'm at the gym, it's just a place for me to kind of connect with myself. Some people meditate, I go lift weights.
Well, okay, great. All right. I'm happy for you. I'm happy that you were able to, that you had a goal of eating healthier and feeling better in that way. It was something you wanted for yourself and that you were able to achieve it. And I wanted to, shower that praise upon you and say that, I notice it.
Well, thank you. Thank you, straight man. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's high praise.
I titled this, that was my question about your shirt size. I titled this episode Wildly Unreasonable. You have a couple videos where you talk about being wildly unreasonable. I think that there's something I want to talk in the context of like Pride Month and the just sort of the current cultural conversation, which feels like a clone of the same cultural conversation we've been having for the last 50 years. And it's so frustrating talking with conservative people who like think that they're telling you something original. And you're like, you're not like I was almost going to say, like, I hope you've had some time this month to shove some things down some people's throats. Cause like every time I hear that thing where people are like, I have no problem with gay people. I have no problem with trans people. I just wish they wasn't shoving it down my throat. I'm like, y'all have been saying that shit my entire life. Like that exact line, word for word off of a script. And it's never been true that it's completely flipped, really. It's like, it's not that, prejudice and bigotry toward the queer community is born out of how visible and how flamboyant the queer community is in public. It's that queer pride is a reaction to that bigotry. It's flipped. It's like, no, queer pride and being public and being loud and proud about who you are is a reaction to how historically marginalized that community has been and how much heteronormative culture has tried to push queer culture into the margins of society. So it's such a stupid argument. And it's also like, also just on its face saying like, I have no problem with X community, I just wish they weren't so visible, is like, I don't know how you don't hear that it's like, if I were to be like, I'm totally fine with black people, I just don't like when I see them in TV shows. It's like, that means you're not fine with them. That means that you don't like them.
Like, hey, Buster, you're doing a racism. I hate to tell you, bud, but you accidentally did a racism. You made your inside thoughts your outside thoughts. Whoopsie.
Which actually is like a thing like a lot of these people do too, is like, if there's just a black person in a movie where they don't think they should be, they're like, I don't like it, and it's I'm not racist, but I get really mad if a person of color shows up somewhere.
There's so many people that I think the most comfortable that people that there's like a certain contingent of people where the most comfortable they are with the idea of queerness was the version of queerness that was presented in like romantic comedies around 2003, like just a sexless gay best friend who is there for all of 4 minutes of that movie to just throw a little, just a little dusting of fashion on you, and to give you just a little sassy little something. And then that's it. Like that's, there's just a pretty certain strong contingent of the population that I think would call themselves allies. And would think that they have all of the right beliefs. Oh, I have gay friends. I'm great with gay people. I love the gays. And that's, but that's the version of queerness that is palatable to them. Is this just like sexless? You know, we're all Ken dolls. We're just plastic Ken dolls from the neck down. We don't have sex. We don't eat. We don't sleep. We just go to the gym and wait to be summoned to work.
I think that that's true of people like from the millennial or Gen X generation, where they're like, I'm even okay with like a little like affectation or flamboyancy. I just don't want to hear about this. I just don't want to even be reminded that the sex part exists. But then it's strange because I'm like, how did we get away with a show like Will and Grace in the 90s, where like even though it's not in there,
because
like
Will
like,
was straight,
right?
Because Jack, the casting of that movie, because the casting of that show had a real gay man, and they said, "Oh, you're too gay. We need to hire the straight man,
to be our main,
to be Will,
But
and
Jack,
we just made him like a Reagan era conservative white man.
True. Like, Will's not the part. The thing that I mean, because like the reason for the show is Jack and Karen, and like that's
which
the show.
That should have been the show a long time.
That's the show. Like, is
Will and
Jack
Grace.
And Karen.
Will and Grace was always fun. Every time we do a rewatch, which my husband loves that show a lot more than I do. but if you're listening.
Yeah.
Anyone connected with that show, I love your show. I'd love to interview you. Thank you so much. You're great. And that's true. I do like all of the people that did that show. I just don't, something about that show lost its edge after I think season 4, something like that. Like the minute, every time we do a rewatch and I see Leo show up, I'm just like, nope, can't, I'm done.
Mm.
It's like when I rewatch The Office, as soon as Michael leaves, I'm done.
Well, I'm actually really glad that a lot of American, this is sort of a tangent, but I'm glad that a lot of American television, because of streaming, is getting shorter. I think that like it's better storytelling to be like 3 or 4 seasons is perfect. Like 3 or 4 seasons, 5 max, but like that's like the most that you need to
Schitt's Creek really found that correct formula of get it, you know, Schitt's Creek, The Good Place, a few other shows really took that British formula of what is the story we want to tell. It's like when you, if you ever watch Supernatural, the TV show Supernatural from the early 2000s, they had a plot for the first 5 seasons. They had a clear arc for the first 5 seasons. That's how the show was sold for the first 5 seasons. And then it got really popular on the CW, and they were like, "Well, we like making money."
Yeah.
And then it went for 10 more seasons. Or
and that's what,
I don't know, like 20, I don't, like way too many.
Yeah.
And so it was, I didn't, there was no reason for it afterwards. Just like let things be things.
For a long time in American television, I feel like that was the MO. And part of me is like, as an actor, as a person in the industry, I'm like, it's jobs for everyone. Like, it's not just the actors, it's all the crew, it's all the writers, it's the directors, it's a job. And I'm like, I get that if you can have a job on a show for 10, 15 years, that's a really nice, that's a really dream, cushy job. But just as a storyteller, I'm like, your story lost its best moments and its gasp 10 years ago, you know? And like, and you're now just...
Yeah, it's, I mean, like, if you're going to have longer seasons, like, I mean, I think a lot of people have seen Abbott Elementary, which is almost the exception that proves the rule, almost, I think, when it comes to that, where they are doing those, like, 20, 22 episode seasons, like, that full network treatment, and a lot of people are like, see, this is why we need to go back to that, and I'm like, yeah, but have you seen all the other shows on TV?
Yeah.
It's like... Abbott is great, but I also don't feel like the creators of Abbott are going to be like, yeah, let's do this for 27 seasons. I just don't,
Yeah,
I feel like somewhere in what's her Quinta Brunson?
I think
I feel like in her mind, yeah, I feel like she knows where she's gonna go.
She wants to do something else. She will after 3 or 4 years. She'll want to direct or do something. But okay, so this whole idea of reasonability and respectability. So I think there are people who would consider themselves allies from our generation, you know, like from either millennial generation or Gen X, who are okay with like the idea of the sexless gay best friend.
Yep.
But then I think even going back further into like boomers who are still contributing to the sociopolitical discourse, they would actually prefer a gay person. It's the same line. I don't care if you're gay. It's the Anita Bryant line. Like, I don't hate gay people. I just need them to like be gay at home. I think what they would prefer is more of like a Dave Rubin, where it's like, you would never know that he's gay. Like, unless he told, where it's just like, I don't need to know the second I meet you that you're gay by the way that your voice sounds or by the way that, you know, and I'm just sort of like, I'm like, you're literally like talking about and I don't know how people don't hear it, that it's like, you're asking me to like adjust intrinsic aspects of my identity so that I'm presenting to you in a way that feels more heteronormative coded.
That man's evolution. Way back in the long, long ago, I listened to his podcast. I was like, where's that guy? What happened to that guy?
Well, he's sort of their perfect archetype for the reasonable gay man.
Yeah.
The reasonable gay person, you know? Yikes.
But no, I mean, you're 100% correct. People like, I mean, but that's I think with any intersection of marginality, you have the people that as long as you can perform heteronormativity, as long as you can perform masculinity, as long as you, or if you're a person of color, if you can perform whiteness, if you can perform, if you're disabled, if you can perform ably, you know, whatever it is, as long as you can perform normativity, that's what they said. Well, see, they can do it. Why can't you? Mm-hmm. Oh, he can make his voice sound more straight if he wants to. Why doesn't he do that? I just, I don't.
Don just tried to eat his microphone in frustration for anyone listening.
This is going to be a great still that's going to come. It's going to. Somebody with Photoshop is going to do terrible things with that. But it's a problem in every community, and that's, I mean, you know, I'm very lucky in the sense that I do still carry quite a lot of privileges, quite a number of privileges. I'm still cisgender. I'm still white. You know, if I were to walk into a room and get up in front of it to speak, not a lot of people would question my right to be in that room. Though I have been in rooms where people were like, as soon as I started talking, and I didn't sound straight, then suddenly it was like, don't like him. I literally, I had a, like, my former boss's boss's boss in a previous meeting in that big corporate job sent back notes after I ran a meeting. Had no problem with the actual content of my being, just that I was a little too sassy. And I looked at my boss and she's like, so maybe just next time. I said, before you say another word, would he have said that if I were straight? And she looked at me and she's like, I don't think you want to go down that road. I said, I think I absolutely want to go down that road. I don't think you want to go down this road.
Yeah.
I don't think that is a note you want to have given me. And I think you should go back to him immediately and tell him if he ever gives me another note like that, I have no problem burning my career to the ground to make sure that his face and his name becomes the main character of the internet. So why don't we try that one all over again? Okay. But the thing is, that's because, like, my mother used to tell me that if you ever get into a room where other people aren't, you need to remember that you represent them as well. And if I'm the first person in that room, I need to make sure that I am not the last person in that room. So it's my job. It's the onus is on me, I think, if I'm the first person to enter a space that's typically not welcoming of queer folks or any intersection of marginality, to be wildly unreasonable, to be unapologetic about standing up for the fact that, like, you don't get to just treat me differently. You don't get to invalidate my expertise or experience just because I'm a little sassy.
See, and I think that a lot of these people that are sort of practicing these respectability politics and asking you to be more reasonable would say that the best way to ensure that you're not the last queer person invited into that space is to behave in a more reasonable way. And sure. Is to reasonably take the note, to be less sassy, and mm-hmm. to, maybe try to make your S's less sibilant. Who knows what the fuck yeah. that means, to be less sassy. I don't know. Like whatever the,
But what's so funny about that is that, like, have you ever been, like, I know I have a lot of women friends, and some of them are in various forms of business and different kinds of corporate levels, and they'll go to, like, women's seminars. And as a gay, sometimes they incorporate me because they think of me as one of the girls. And I'll listen to, like, women teach each other how to talk about sports so that when they're in corporate settings, they can speak straight man. You know, I'll listen to people talk about how to pick out certain kinds of outfits, how to do their hair in certain ways so that we can all bend to that version. Like, the cisgender heterosexual white upper middle class or higher man is not doing any of those things. They are not having to go take classes on how to be in front of themselves. They're not having to go figure out how to speak them. They are them. They are the societal default. Everybody else has to learn how to fit that. And that's dumb because they don't represent everybody. It's dumb that we have to exist in a world where being respectable means erasing the authentic expression of a world of humans, a world of humanity out there, in order to be a simulacrum of Chad.
Well, Simulacrum of Chad is also the title of this episode. Yep. That's fantastic. But I also, like, I think that this really, and I think you're doing this too with the wildly unreasonable slogan and with the merch. I think it's, correct me if I'm wrong, you might be, it's a little tongue in cheek too, because
yeah.
all, what I really think is true is that I don't think you actually are being unreasonable. And I think who is being unreasonable is anyone who is propagating white heteronormative culture and demanding that the world around them kowtow to it and assimilate. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's unreasonable. Yeah. Is looking at an ideologically pluralistic world, a world of this massive plurality of identities and this beautiful diversity that exists in our world, and saying that's fine that all these people exist, but when they're in my space, they need to figure out how to communicate in a way that mm-hmm. makes me comfortable.
Right.
And that to me is what's unreasonable. That to mm-hmm. me is what is wildly unreasonable, is to say, it's totally okay that you exist in whatever weird way you exist in at your house.
Yeah.
But when you're out in public in front of my kids, I need you to try to find a way to pretend that you're not that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's fucking insane.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's actually unreasonable at all to be.
No,
like,
I mean, of course, it's sort of like when Mitch McConnell told, got up in front of the Senate floor and said about Elizabeth Warren. Nevertheless, she persisted. It's like, okay, well, thank you for Elizabeth Warren's, entire identity, public identity forever. When somebody hops in my comments and says, people are trying, you just need to be a little bit more reasonable about, meeting them where they are. I'm like, no, not like that. No, I'm not going to be reasonable when it comes to, you telling me that, like, we just didn't know that drag wasn't basically a sex show. There was just no way for us to know that. And so if you could just be a little bit more reasonable, like we get that we've been passing hundreds of laws all around the country this year to basically erase trans people, queer people from public spaces, but like just be reasonable. How could we possibly know? And I'm like, do you really not hear it?
Right.
Do you not?
Yeah. Somebody just asked in the comments, and I think that this, I mean, it's, I'm
there's comments.
Yeah. There's a little.
Oh my God. There are so many comments. I didn't know people were here. Oh, hi people. Yeah.
Just a handful. There's a small handful that watch it live and then most people watch it later. But this question of, is there times where you see hope in getting through to someone, and feeling the urge to pull back to help them? Not that you need to, but is that a common occurrence?
Basically, I think what they're
asking, like,
anybody with any intersection of marginality can always tell when somebody's trying. And there's a difference, like, so in a lot of my videos and a lot of my content, you know, I will explain a recent law or explain some piece of culture that has come up that I just personally feel inspired to speak about, or that I feel like I have a voice for whatever reason. I mean, I don't make short videos. I don't just hop on and be like, oh, that sucks. Like, I do go into quite a bit of depth about the history of a particular topic. I'll cite sources. I'll put up articles for you to read and then like literally cite the source so that you can go read it elsewhere. Like, I'm very happy to like do the legwork. I also publish books. I'm pretty good about like making sure that people, can get the information if they want it. But if you can make it through all of that, if you can make it through, you know, this 5-minute video and then at that 8.5-minute video and then read this book and then, you know, you do all that and you still come to the end of it and you're like, I don't know, drag is sex, basically drag is sex and that doesn't belong around my kid and you're not answering the question. Yeah. Like, okay, there's meeting you where you are and then you're being an obstinate fool. And I don't have time for that, because I just don't know. I don't know that your mind is going to get changed by us bantering on the internet. I just don't know that that's going to fix anything. But yeah, I mean, 100%. If somebody is meeting you in good faith, they're just not where you are on your journey. I mean, the only reason I am who I am and what I am is because other people at one time saw that I was trying, and if I messed up, they very graciously were like, okay, so let's course correct. Let's talk about what privilege is. And let's talk about how just because, you know, this doesn't mean this and yada, yada. Because people can always tell you're trying. It's when you are not trying. And when you start sea lioning or gaslighting or any of that kind of stuff, that's when I'm like, okay, you're not here to learn. You're not here to listen to learn. You're here to listen to wait your turn to talk. And that's a different thing.
And if you spend enough time in that space on the internet trying to reasonably educate people, trying to be calm and trying to provide them with information that they absolutely could have found themselves and that they absolutely could have spent but like trying to be like, okay, cool, you seem to be asking some questions, because a lot of people will be like, hey, I'm genuinely curious here. Don't hate me.
I'm very active in the comment section, and I'll make reply videos and stuff. If somebody isn't getting it, I will be like, hey, email me. I'm happy to send you, you know, sources or whatever. And I'll, especially over on Instagram where it's a little easier to kind of like pin things and the little highlights or something, like, hey, here's a resource list. Here's what you were asking for. And I love that you can put links there. It's like, here, you know, click these, here's extra learning. Here's better voices than me speaking on this. Here's actual PhDs and actual people whose life's work this is. I'm happy to be a platform to raise up their voices and to put the spotlight where actual research belongs, because I don't know everything. I know very little. It's kind of like we were talking earlier, the more that you know, the higher up your scale of 10 goes. Sure. But I know what I don't know, and I'm very thrilled to point people in the right direction. It's just always like, when you're not here for that, really, you can usually tell. You can usually tell.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, because I will engage with those people from time to time who are, you know, and But I also want to say this too, that it's like, even those people that are like, hey, I'm genuinely, please don't be mad. I just don't know a lot about this. I'm genuinely curious. Even those people, I'm like, I'll do it from time to time if I have the space and the time to like give a shit about that question. Or sometimes I'll just leave it to the comment. I'll be like, someone else can handle that. But like, I want them to also understand that I'm like, I still don't owe you that. I don't owe you like delivering that information and with any kind of tone that will make it easier for you to digest. Like, this is all information that is readily available to you. This conversation that's happening around whether or not we should be nice to queer people is like, it's old. It's been going on since before you or I were born. Mm-hmm. And the conversation has not evolved much. It hasn't really like grown new legs, or like there haven't been like new interesting arguments put forth. I made a video like two or three years ago. I think when the Don't Say Gay bill was first happening in Florida, which I think was like a year and a half, 2 years ago, something like that. And I was like, I just was like, listen, I can't believe we're about to enter back into this discourse in our sociopolitically. Like, we're about to get back into all of the same shit of like whether or not it's okay for kids to see gay people existing and stuff. And I was like, we already did all this. And I just was like, and I've been doing this in my life for the last 20 years. And what I can tell you is, there are no good arguments from the other side. I've heard every single iteration of every possible argument, and there are no good ones. The only one that people have that I can go like, okay, I'll let you have that is like my religion. And I'm like, okay, great, your religion. And you can keep that, and you can go do that at your church where they do that.
Yeah.
And I'm
thrilled. And I'm like, listen, whatever it is that is your faith and your religion between you and the gods of your understanding, that is fantastic. But it's the unicorn in the shoes argument. You know, you can believe that unicorns are in your shoes, and you can believe that you need to put your shoes on in a certain way so as not to harm the unicorns. The problem is if you start telling me how I'm supposed to put my shoes on so I don't harm the unicorns, and then you make laws about shoe putting on. And how shoes should be made so that they're more accommodating to unicorns. That's where we start having a problem.
Yeah, and also the only reason why I allow people to have the unicorn belief or whatever is because it's unfalsifiable, and I'm just sort of like, that's fine, you can go ahead and hang on to that. But I'm like, even if we wanted to get into the weeds on that argument, I could be like, I'm pretty sure your evidence that your religion is against this thing is also pretty thin. If we wanted to get into that, I could be like, you're using one verse from one book that has been translated and retranslated and retranslated and retranslated to justify this entire culture of social prejudice and bigotry. And that to me is like, it's too thin. Like, I would need more substance in your book that verifies that this is how you're supposed to behave to these people in order for me to be like, okay, yeah, it's very clear in your book that your God is telling you to be really rude to these people. And that's very, but I'm like, it's not clearly in there to me. It's just not like, but I'm like, whatever. It's unfalsifiable. It's magic book stuff. And I'll let you have it just out of basic respect of whatever you want your spiritual practice to be.
Sure.
But it's still like pretty weak, even as like a religious argument. It's pretty weak, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah. I've talked to a lot of people in a lot of spiritual spaces, and anytime that they start intersecting with science or any level of, you know, proof, I always like to say, okay, so, you know, I wrote a whole book about magical thinking. It was my last book. And I spent a lot of time kind of like debunking some things and talking about the Barnum effect and the Forer effect and the crystal mining industry and all of that kind of thing. Not to dissuade people from, magical thinking, and whatever it is that gives them some kind of spiritual practice that spiritual fulfillment. And if that's where they want to find it, it's that so that when you do that, you know what it is that you are taking on faith, not so that you know, you're not going, oh, well, see, it's been proven that this crystal, if I put this crystal in my hoo-ha, it's going to actually scientifically do this to my chakras. Like, it is not going to do that. In fact, it's probably going to give you copper poisoning. But like, that's a don't do that. Yeah. But like, so, you know, I wish that people understood that when it comes to spiritual beliefs, spiritual practices, that kind of thing, you know, when people try to use that as evidence, or when they try to prove their own spirituality or spiritual faith or whatever, I'm like, okay, let's don't do that, because that's not a road you really want to go down. Like, I think you need to understand the difference between like belief or faith and proof, because they're not really going to intersect as often as you think they are.
The book says that the book is true does not qualify as empirical evidence that the book is true.
If it does, then I'm very upset at the absence of the X-Men.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Very upset.
Says right here in this book that they should be here. Yeah.
I think I should be at the School for Gifted Youngsters. And I'm very upset that I've not gotten that invitation.
I thought it was so funny. You have this video where you talk about, which I also think it's a very well done, well written, and heartwarming video, and also heartbreaking video. Where you talk about just wanting to be a kid growing up, because people say, people are like, it's again this thing of, I have no problem with queer people existing. It doesn't bother me. I'm not a bigot, but can we keep it away from kids? Let kids be kids. I'm pretty sure is what this commenter said. And you talked about like being bullied because you were just trying to be a kid. And this sort of idea of like, yeah, but also queer kids exist and are just trying to be kids. But I thought in that video, I thought it was funny that you were like, some of the boys wanted to play sports and I wanted to play superheroes, and they called me a girl for that. And I'm like, wait, hold on. What's wrong with wanting to play superheroes? Like,
well, but it's, I mean, you know, and some people heard the first 30 seconds and got done with it, but I understand it was a very long video, but,
like it a lot. Yeah.
You know, I grew up in the intersection of Friday Night Lights and Footloose, in a very literal way. Like, our school did not have a prom on campus because dancing is a sin. So that's the kind of Baptist community that I grew up in. I grew up in a world where football was king, but I just was not remotely interested in sports. I was very interested in Power Rangers. I was very interested in X-Men, but I was also, you know, the rest of that sentence is, I was also much softer than the other boys. And when I went to McDonald's, I wanted the Barbie Happy Meal, and all of my friends were girls. And so, yeah, I loved superheroes, but I also wanted to be, I wanted to be the pretty superhero, and I wanted to be, you know, have the Barbie Happy Meal, and I wanted to do all those kinds of things. And that didn't fit in with what they understood a boy to be. It flew in the face of what they thought boy was. So they didn't like it. And they were like, well, if you're not boy, then you must be girl. Mm-hmm. So that's what they called me, because we didn't have that language at that time. I get chased around and beaten up, called a girl. Pretty universal experience.
Yeah, I always love when I hear like a trans woman saying like, I grew up and you were all calling me a girl. Like, when I was like a kid, you were all calling me a girl. Mm-hmm. And then I grew up and I was like, I think I am a girl. And you were all like, no, you're not.
Yeah, no, you're not.
Absolutely.
How dare you?
No, like, you're not. How dare you do that? It's like, you all called me a girl when I was like, you know.
I thought
like,
I was this whole time. And then I'm like, you know, I think you're right. And they're like, no,
absolutely
not like that.
Not. Yeah, not like that. No.
No, not like that.
Yeah, exactly.
We didn't want this to be empowering.
Right.
we wanted it to hurt, because we hate girls and being girl is bad. So girl is insult.
Oh God, that's a whole podcast we could do too, is just like... Yeah.
Well, like, I would be the wrong person for that, because I'm not girl.
Right, so. but like just like the misogyny inherent in homophobia and transphobia.
Oh gosh,
and why
the femphobia and the racism and the racial infrastructure of the queer community, and it's a mess.
Yeah, people are always like, how come? Mess. how come we don't, everything's about trans women and we sort of just like don't really talk about trans men. And it's like, well, it's the same thing. It happens the same way with like, and we do, people do, and people are bigoted towards trans men and are bigoted towards lesbians. But like in general, there's this societal transgression of like a man behaving in a feminine way. Someone who is so supposed to be socially crass,
it's a lot. It's because men hear, you did what with your dick?
Yeah.
What'd you do? Why'd you do that? Don't do that. Like, they're like, they think cutting off pee-pees and then they just freak out.
It's a transgression of the masculine. Yep. Like, you're not supposed to. Yep. The masculine is supposed to be this like sacred, holy thing. And anything that takes you away from a heteronormative ideal of what is masculine is this massive societal taboo. Yeah. Yep. Which, you know, fuck that. Getting back into this reasonability thing really quick though, all the, you know, cause we could go through all of the bad arguments that they always have. And I'm not really interested in recapping that. I think it's sufficient to say that I have yet in my life, I have yet to hear an argument that's even remotely compelling, as to like why we should marginalize or other queer people. There, I don't think a good argument exists. I don't even think a remotely compelling one exists. And this one, is I think people who can acknowledge that there are no good arguments available to them, I think they go to this reasonability thing because they're like, okay, fine. Yeah, I have no good reason to dislike these people. But could they just like tone it down? And sure, maybe if you're dealing with a person who's like, I'm genuinely asking a question, I'm not trying to be obtuse or annoying, I'm really trying to learn, maybe you can try to treat that person with a, I don't know. But yeah, I definitely come back to it.
Like I said, you can always tell when somebody is approaching with the right spirit. When I have said something in a way that makes something click for them for the first time.
Yes.
And I've had a lot of that, and I'm very grateful. You know, this year has kind of been a wild ride for me and social media. So, you know, a lot more people are seeing the way that I present information. And for whatever reason, sometimes when I say things and the way that I say things, and maybe the face helps, you know, the snark helps, or maybe the sass helps. I don't know. But for some reason, for sometimes some people, it just suddenly clicks. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you the number of people, the number of cisgender heterosexual men that like emailed me or sent me a DM or left a comment or something like that. And were like, this is the first time I got it. Like if you had asked me this question yesterday, I would have said that like basically queer people are predators, but I got it, and now I feel awful. And it's like, you know, just something will click. And so you can always tell when something has just clicked and now somebody is trying to unlearn some stuff and go on that journey, and they don't have all the right words and all the right language yet. And that is when I will meet you where you are. I'm 100% here for imperfect allies. I'm not here for people whose allyship is conditional.
Well, and that's the thing about this work, right, is it's tedious work that is a lot of repeating yourself. And because a lot of times, like, because people will tell me the same thing too. They'll be like, I'd never heard it like that. And I'm like, I've been saying it like this for a while now.
Long time.
But I'm like, to lots of different people. And it's
other people
just
say it better than me. I'm glad I'm here for you.
And I'm not necessarily saying anything that hasn't been said a million times exactly by other people. Yep. But like sometimes a person just needs to hear again and again, that's just a person. So it's just like, hey, that trans person is just a person. That's just a different kind of person that exists. Yep. And they just need to hear that again and again and again until all of a sudden one day it's just like, oh, that's just a person. That's just a person having a human experience.
Sometimes you needed it in a funny song. Oh, sometimes you needed to see it in a skit. Sometimes you needed to hear it in a heartbreaking story. Sometimes it needed to be a dirty song. Sometimes it needed to be whatever. And whatever it is, it all adds up.
And maybe sometimes they needed to hear it in a way that felt really reasonable and kind. And maybe sometimes they needed to hear it in a way that felt like it shook them to life. Like someone grabbed them and went, hey, motherfucker, you're a bigot. And they went, oh my God, I'm a bigot. Oh my God. Whoa. Yep. You know, like, and it's like, and I don't think that there's any.
That's right. I'm real good at that. I'm like, hey, you're doing a homophobia. Don't do that anymore. This is bad.
Off.
Also, you look, ew.
In 2023? Yeah. Are we still doing homophobia? Oh my God, look at you being retro.
You're embarrassing yourself. You're embarrassing.
So embarrassing.
Yeah. Like, you're knock it off.
You know that you're doing that in public, right? This is a Whole Foods. I don't think they allow that here.
Yeah, this idea that if queer people would just, and their allies and their advocates would just tone it down,
yeah,
suddenly the world would become less homophobic.
I'm gonna be real honest. If you consider yourself an ally, I need you to tone it up. I need you to tone it way, way up, because we're tired. Mm-hmm. I would like to not have to spend so much time defending my existence. It'd be great. It'd be better if you guys, there's another creator, something Blue Dot, and she's great.
Love her.
She's
yeah, Blue
Hand
Blue Dot.
Yes. She does a ton of, content where she's really doing that. That is what an ally looks like, you know, where it's like, here, I've got all the privilege in the world. I'm a cisgender, heterosexual, white, blonde lady. I'm comfy and I'm good. And I will sit here and tell you to your face, here's all of the resources. Here's da 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 da. And then I will take the heat. And that's, you know, sometimes I just need you to do that because we are tired of being targets. It would be great if we could just rest for a second and not have to have us going to the store be a political act. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. I just want to go to Target and put a little drinky drink in my hands. And I just want to go. And I don't want to have it be a political act. Like, I don't want to have every single heartbeat be, you know, a drum on a freaking resistance line. Sometimes you just want to breathe and sometimes you just want to exist. But the more intersections, and I have it so much better than other people. I have it so much better than, I mean, my husband is from Mexico. He's a Mexican immigrant. The world that he lives in is vastly different than the world that I live in. I mean, he has an entire doctorate and he'll walk into a room and somebody will tell him that, oh, and he'll start asking questions of a patient, and they'll say, oh, we'll let the doctor know. He's like, who the fuck do you think I am? The fuck? I don't...
It's like that moment from the Barbie trailer where Ryan Gosling's like, and can I talk to a doctor? And it's a woman, and she's like, you are talking to a doctor. Yeah. And he's like, no, I need to talk to a man. it's literally like...
And it's like, you know, the world that he lives in is vastly different than the world I live in. But the world that, you know, the Black trans woman lives in is far and away a world that I do not live in. And so if ever I can take on some of that heat so that that person does not have to have those conversations and that person can feel protected, that is my job as their ally. Because, you know, people with privilege, it is our job to take on the heat for those of us with less privilege. So as tired as I am, there's a whole lot of people who are way more tired and been tired for a whole lot longer than me. So, you know, the work continues.
Well said. Absolutely. I wanted to talk about rainbow capitalism a little bit because I did say that we were going to come back to that. And you did bring up Target and having a little drinky drink in your hand.
Thank you.
And
I did that so you could come back. I'm a professional podcaster. Do you like that?
Thank you very much for bringing it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for bringing it back. That was fantastic.
Thank you so much.
I want to know sort of like what your thoughts are on like, you know, corporate pride support and stuff like that. And especially right now in this year where we've had these like pretty successful boycotts of like the Bud Light and Target that have actually been affecting profit margins for these companies. I'm like, there's part of me that goes like, oh no, that's us losing ground in the culture war somehow. And then there's also part of me that's like, I don't actually give a fuck about Anheuser-Busch or about Target and their performative support of this or that community.
So, I've been around the space a long time, and these are conversations that the queer community has been having internally for a very long time. And our view, I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but the majority of the conversations that I've seen tend to boil down to, okay, where is the money really going? Where is the money actually going? Like, okay, sell what you want to sell.
where's the money going? Like, you know, Black History Month, February. Target runs around and pulls every Black doll off the shelf and every book written by a Black author. And, you know, they put it on a table and stick it up at the front and say, look, we're doing an allyship. It's like, okay, where is the money go? I mean, okay, so you're making a profit off of Black History Month. So we're profiting off of Black people. Where is the money going from the sales of that? How are your internal policies towards people of color, specifically Black people? What does your leadership look like? Same thing in Pride Month. Same thing there. Same thing with any intersection of marginality. So it's like, okay, great. You guys want to sell some rainbow thongs or whatever. Cool. Where are the profits going? Like, and you know, I was a big, loud, angry, you know, voice for many years of the fact that Target for a long time, and I don't actually know what's happened in the last couple of years because I think it's gotten kind of vague. From what I've looked up, it's gotten even more vague about what happens with the money. But queer folks for a long time have been saying, like, we want, like, there should be a share of the profits should be going mm-hmm. to queer charities. And what Target was doing was they were making like a nominal donation, like small for Target, like $100,000, to like the HRC.
Yeah.
And then making however much money they were making off of rainbow.
It's like 10
stuff.
Bucks.
Yeah. 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 And it's like, okay, well, make your donation. Sure. But then also the profits from these need to go to queer folks. I mean, you know, we're not represented in this. I mean, you know, this stuff is only around this month, which is different than other months. I mean, you know, those Black authors are on those shelves all the time. It's like, you know, y'all are doing very specifically a whole bunch of rainbow stuff all at once in June. So where are the profits from that going? What do the policies look like? Are they egalitarian? Are they equitable to queer folks inside of your company? How are queer folks treated? Are there queer people in leadership? Are they supported? Are queer people supported inside of your company? Do you also give equally or more to politicians or organizations who fight against queer people? Because that happens a lot, like a lot. Like a lot of the companies that people are like, oh, they went so woke. I'm like, do you have any idea how much money they're given to conservative politicians that are actively working against our lives? Like, I don't call that woke. I call that playing both sides of the fence.
It's capitalism. So, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, we're glad it's there because representation is good. Any consistent representation helps people from an in-group slowly become aware and accustomed to people of an out-group and to start seeing those people from an out-group as part of their in-group. Yay, Sociology 101. So any little bit of representation, any little bit of exposure helps. And it helps especially for those Target stores or those little, you know, some grocery stores and stuff will have a teeny tiny little Pride section or something, maybe like a rainbow tumbler or something. But in smaller towns and more rural areas, that little section, that little tiny Pride section is a lifeboat. That is a life preserver for some people where they're like, I'm not alone. There are other people like me. There is a way out. I'm not the only one. And that means a whole lot. And I've came from a town of 585 people. Let me tell you, any little thing was a big deal where I was from. So it's all good. What's scary is how quickly it goes away. So like, you know, that's why, do I love giving Target my money? No. Do I want to make sure that the Pride stuff come back next year? Yes. Do I love what they actually put out? No, I think it's stupid and trite. But I'm still going to go buy a t-shirt because I want it to come back next year because I'm kind of afraid after this year, it will either not come back or not come back in all the markets it was in this year or come back and be very tiny.
Yeah, because it's like, like I give Target my money because if it's Target or Walmart, I just like prefer Target. It has nothing to do with their politics. Has nothing to do. It's just like I just prefer as like a person who lives in capitalism. I'm just like, sure, if I got to go to one of those stores, I go to Target, and I just prefer aesthetically that store. But like, I don't think that Target's being any more ethical with my money than any other store will be.
Target is the superfood of the big box store. They are just a regular food with some really good PR. They're just a nut with some real good PR. That's like, oh, we're higher in antioxidants. Like, no, bestie, you are the same as everybody else. You guys are just. You did those like little designer capsule collection. Like you put your little spit polish and you made yourself be like the uppity big box store. And listen, it works.
Yeah.
I would prefer to go to Target. I mean, it worked on me.
Yeah.
I who doesn't love a Target run? Why do you go to Target? I don't know. I don't need anything from there. There is nothing that I'm like, oh yeah, I have to go to Target because they have this one specific thing. No, I can get it cheaper somewhere else. You go there because it's a thing. I don't know why. It's sick. Yeah. It's in your DNA.
Yeah.
I think it's the microplastics. I think that's what it is. I think it's something.
So I definitely
the fluoride in the water.
I don't give a shit about these companies' profit margins or anything like that. But I think that you make a really, really good point about just what that kind of visibility of those kind of symbols and signaling can mean, especially in rural communities and really religious communities where there's kids grow again, coming back to kids, that it's like queer kids exist and they are having an experience that we need to be cognizant of. And like, we need to be trying to raise them in a world where they have hope for a future where they can see themselves represented. And sometimes just that, just being it, like, cause yeah, I don't want to live. As much as I don't give a shit about, Target's profits, I also don't want to live in a world where like, bigots are able to dictate to these companies whether or not they can performatively show support of marginalized communities, you know?
Right. I don't want to live in the, I mean, if they can scream and shout with their voice, then I can scream and shout with my dollar. And I would hope that my dollar wins. But that's where we need the allies. That's where I, you know, earlier when I was like, okay, allies, you got to tone it up. You know, if the bigots are out smashing stuff, you know, maybe go smash, maybe y'all do whatever that is in reverse. Go, y'all go buy some stuff. Y'all go use your dollars. Y'all go support. But, you know, but also, yes, and go find queer businesses to support. Go find queer indie artists to support. Go find queer mutual aid organizations in your area to support. Go support the HRC. Go support, go give your money directly to a drag queen story hour. Like, yes. go into your local area. I'm working with a randomly a few months ago, I found this little indie this little family that was started making coffee like in their backyard, and I tried their coffee and put it on my social media, and they kind of blew up, and we decided that we would do kind of a little thing for Pride Month, and I said, okay, let's do a little limited run coffee thing, maybe add a couple of extra bucks to it so that you guys are still paid, but you know, there's something that we can give back to the queer community, but make sure it's just in your local area. I don't want any money from it. Let's just make sure that it's in your local area. What queer charities are in your area? And they're in a kind of a more, not quite rural, but kind of exurban area of, I think, North Carolina. And they were like, we have been looking. And the best we can do is there is a suicide hotline in the area that like does a lot of queer outreach. And there's just really not anything else. And I was like, well, it's better than nothing. But man, that's something. But it's something I relate to. I mean, I'm from an area like that where there's just no queer outreach. There's just no queer visibility, no voice. You know, the only thing that's there is well, don't die. Don't unalive yourself. Like, and that's where a lot of people are. So that's why
That's why it's important to, yes, shop small, but maybe also throw a few dollars at the rainbow capitalism that you see, if you see it somewhere, so that maybe that will be there for those tiny areas out in the middle of nowhere. You know, maybe that Walmart will have, but Walmart has a pride section. Why didn't they get all this hate?
Yeah, exactly.
But maybe some Walmart somewhere, maybe some rainbow will be there for some kid that needs it next year.
Yeah. Somebody in the comments made that point too, that they were like, all these people, you know, picketing.
I keep forgetting there's comments. Yeah. Hi, comments.
People are like, all these people picketing Target are probably picking Walmart anyway. They're probably people that go to Walmart anyway. I was like, yeah, it's true. A lot of them. But this has been fantastic. It's been really, really lovely talking with you.
Oh, I do like that. Somebody asked about the we're here, we're queer, and we're coming for your kids.
Did you see
chant?
That?
I yeah. did. So to debunk that real quick. So at the very beginning of that video, the person either recording the video or somebody else, because the actual chant comes from the AIDS crisis in the 80s. The actual chant is we're here, we're queer, we're not going shopping. And there's this whole history of the chant, but somebody at the like one person at the beginning said in the most sarcastic way, and of course it's now been taken out and run off and without context, to say we're here, we're queer, oh, we're coming for your children.
And it's the person filming, it's like the person with the phone. And I think some people in the crowd, you know, if you've ever been to a protest, all it takes is someone to stand up and yell something and people just sort of repeat. There's sort of a parroting effect. And there are a couple people like in the immediate vicinity of the filmer who like also say we're coming for
but
your
the
kids
whole rest of the parade, if just go
if they're all saying
the audio and watch their lips, and then it only happens that one time. Then for the rest of the clip, it's all just we're here, we're queer, we're not going shopping, and that's what they say for the whole rest of the time. Right. Like it's not a thing that really happened, and that first thing is just somebody being like, "Oh, you know, oh, better keep us away. We're scared. We're coming for your kids." Like they were very clearly being sarcastic, and it's just unfortunately they were sarcastic in public.
Well, again,
be sarcastic in public because the people that hate us will take every it's like those people that were trying to say that President Biden admitted to treason or something because he was like, oh, you know, I like to hide documents too, or something. Like he made some joke or something a few days ago. It was like clearly a joke. It was so clearly a joke that is being taken wildly out of context.
Well, and it just fuels into, again, the terrible, the sea of terrible arguments that come from these people that are all unoriginal and all have been used a million times before. And it's nothing new. Goes all the way. Anita Bryant was saying this. It goes all the way back that, you know, that they're coming for your kids. And that's the big thing that everyone like, hey, I got no problem. It's just the kids. And I'm like, if you're a person in 2023, who actually believes that kids can be trans or turned gay by seeing gay or trans people existing in reality, then I don't know. It's like, then you're not, then I can't help you. Like you're
Listen,
not a serious
there is
person.
No, drag queens do not turn anyone gay. Tobey Maguire turns people gay when he gets bitten by a spider and then stands in front of a mirror and flexes his new abs and says, I'm fine. That's how you turn gay.
But it's like I love those memes too. Like this isn't how the drag queens don't turn people gay. And then everyone's been showing like the thing that gave me my sexual awakening or whatever, the image or the pop culture icon.
I had in the early days of DVD, I had the DVD player and I only had like three movies and that was one of them. And I replayed that scene a lot. And I was like, this is an interesting scene. This scene very specifically should win an Oscar. Don't know why, but it should.
And if it were true that your environment is what determines your sexuality,
I'd be an awful man. I would be a terrible person if it were.
Exactly.
And you just,
That's what I was, because based on the place that you were raised and based on the people that you were, the people you were raised around and the community and the culture, there's no way that you would have been pausing and rewinding that Tobey Maguire.
Saved my life because I just, oh man, I can't imagine. I just know that there is some alternate universe version of me where some little whatever makes you gay, some little something in your DNA twisted in just a different way. And there's a straight version of me in some multiverse. And that man is sad.
That man is sad, and I'm just so glad I'm not him, because the world is so much bigger for me than it is for him. That man is probably still living in that small town and thinking that he's, you know, he's still very smart and he's still very witty, but his world is much smaller than mine is, and I'm grateful every day.
You know, I used to say when I first started engaging with this work when I was like 19, 20, it took me a while to start, you know, being more vocal about it and stuff, but when I first started kind of really this has been a cause that's been near and dear to my heart for a very long time. This is sort of the thing that sort of, was the catalyst for my like religious deconversion and stuff like that, is I just had too many friends who were queer who I just was like, I can't conceive of this person any other way than how I know them, which is just like, I love them and I can't, you know, and, but my whole life people have been asking me if I'm gay because there's just something in my energy, which I'm totally cool with. Cause I'm like, I like it. In fact, I'm kind of offended when people are like, nah, you're really straight. I'm like, what the fuck does that
mean? I don't know what this says then. Yeah. I never thought you were gay. I always thought you were straight. I'm sorry.
That's okay. But,
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
It is the shirt. It's only the shirt. It's it. I mean, I just, yeah.
This is how I signal. It's not rainbow. It's just bland, straight, horizontal lines.
Straight.
Okay. But I used to say,
I'm going to see that in a skit of yours soon. Yeah. You can tell I'm straight, and you can tell by the straightness of the lines on my shirt.
Hold a ruler up to that. You see that?
Yeah.
That's,
hold a ruler.
Yeah. But I used to say to people, when they would ask me that, I go, sometimes I wish that I was, just because I think it would help my family out. I think it would
clear a few things up for them, make a few things make more sense.
And to be fair, my family is all great now. Like everyone in my family is like really like, I think, on the right side of history, and everyone's like pulling in the same direction when it comes to this issue, at least. And but at the time when I first was, I was like the first person in my family to like leave the religion that I was raised in and stuff. And this was a big thing that we would argue about. And I'd be like, sometimes I wish I was queer just so that I could like be a person that they have to love, that I'd be like, well, you don't get to not love me. You have to like, so you have to make a choice, you know, and then also I think sometimes I just like, I don't know. I just love queer people so much. I just like love queer culture, and like I'm like obsessed with drag culture, and like, and I'm a musical theater guy, and I've always been like, what was your show? I'm a big Stephen Sondheim person, and like when he died, it like really devastated me. I cried for like an entire day about it. And
I think the first musical I was in was Wizard of Oz. I was the Tin Man. What did I do later? I was at theater camp, and we did Into the Woods, and I was one of the princes. I don't remember which. It doesn't matter. They don't actually have names in the script. They're just like Cinderella's prince and Rapunzel's prince, which is fantastic, which is the way it should be.
Yep, the princes, yep.
Into the Woods is very much giving like, you know, she's everything and he's just Ken. Like that's who the princes are in Into the Woods.
It's fair.
Yeah.
And fair. Like that's how those stories are written, is it's just like, well, it's about.
Though I will say Agony is the best. It is the best song.
It's incredible.
Get into the woods. Yeah.
Well, Agony, and the whole theme of these men thinking that like this conquest is going to make their lives complete. And then once they get it, they're like, oh, I guess never mind. I don't know what it is to be happy. But I think I'm living proof that if someone were capable of choosing their orientation in the world, that I don't think I would have chosen to be a hetero cis guy. I really don't. Like a lot of times I'm just like, I don't relate to this culture or to these people.
Can't relate.
And it just is a thing where I'm like, just is what it is.
But see, you have like John Hodgman vibes in like all of the correct ways, like very much John Hodgman energy. Just like, if that is not the gayest straight man, like that is like gay culture in a man. Like just snarky, erudite,
I almost said Fluffernutter, and I don't know why, but it felt right. So there you go. Just like, stiff and in all the correct ways. Where are you doing? Do you make more songs? Where are your songs? Because I feel like I had your song as a ringtone for a while there. I don't remember which one it was, but it was fantastic.
It was a big part of the content for a while there. For like a good like year and a half, I was making songs. Like
that's how I found you.
Yeah, I was making songs like once a week.
People found me from my trauma. Yeah. So yours is better, I think.
Well,
Funny songs is better than hey, I'm the sad day of the week.
I kind of burn it out. I was talking to a friend about this the other day. Like it's sort of the same bit over and over again, because the joke is like, I'm going to write like a catchy synth wave, like synth pop song about this sociopolitical thing. And that joke I made like 65 of them, and I'm like, that's a lot of times to like reinvent that joke. And even though every song is different, it's still essentially the same format. And I think I just sort of exhausted it for myself. And also like, they're just high effort videos to make. I have to spend like a week producing the song.
And you know what I hate about the platform is that the more effort you spend on something, the fewer people see it.
Right.
I will spend a week prepping. There will be props. I will write a script. I will tape a script to a ring light, and there will be microphones, and I will do a script, and I will think it's very funny, and 450 people will see it. And then I will make a 12-second video in a fit of snark, and I won't even remember making it. And I will wake up and 3 million people will have seen it. And I'm like, there's something wrong here. This math problem is not doing the math correctly.
Yeah, a big part of why I was making the songs too is I thought, oh, because they were doing numbers and they were doing well, but I was like, oh, this will be a great way for me to also introduce to the audience that I'm a musician with like actual music on Spotify and stuff that they can go stream. But like, it didn't translate. Like everyone was like, you should put out an actual album, and I was like, oh, I have.
The number of people who get into my comments and are like, I really love your voice and the way you explain things. I wish you would write a book. And I'm like, I've written three.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've written three.
And good luck trying to make a video telling people that those books exist.
Oh my God.
And yeah.
I love your voice. I could listen to it all day. Well, guess what? I have an entire podcast. And Simon and Schuster had me narrate my audiobook last time. So you have several hundred hours of me to listen to, if that is what your cotton picking heart desires.
But I saw a video that you posted of you talking to David Archuleta on your podcast, and I literally
that
was like,
came out today.
And it made me feel I related to you, because I was like, I know exactly the struggle of posting a video from my podcast and being like, I really wish this would do the same numbers that my other videos do. But it's like the algorithm's just like, absolutely not. We're not going to let you tell people that this podcast exists.
What I love is that there's this myth that once you hit a certain follower count, well, you're making money. Mm-hmm. And that is a lie. This is a lot. I fully have a day job, like a full on 9-to-5 Monday through Friday day job. I just took today off because I'm finishing a book. So another book. I've written three this year. It sucks. I am very tired. In three different genres too. I'm an insane person.
Wow.
And my agent is like, "What are you doing? Stop it."
Pickling. That's impressive. Wow.
Have you ever met an overachiever kid, like a former, like one of those like gifted and talented overachiever kids? Like this is what we do in life. It's like, well, I can be everything. I'll teach myself. I'll be all the things. I'll be the Ronan Farrow of the nonfiction world. I'll be the Neil Gaiman of the fiction world, and I'll be the Billy Collins of the poetry world.
Can't waste that potential. Nope. Yeah.
They told me I could be everything. So I'm gonna be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know what I was talking about. But people will be like, oh, I wish you'd do stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I'm doing it. It's there. Oh, that's people think you hit a follower count and you make money. I'm like, no, see, I have the follower count that I could make. Like this could be my full-time job.
But the math problem that runs all these apps where I have these big, big followings, they won't let you know that those other things exist.
Yeah. It's so very fun.
I can't get enough people to listen to my show that I could monetize it in a way that I could maybe eat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really fun. I'm making a video right now for YouTube about the algorithm because I think it's funny anytime people think that they've like hacked it or figured it out, or all these people that tell you like what, and I'm just like, no, nobody actually. This thing is
favorite thing. I had a friend who I've known for a long time. She was like, you shared a video of mine to your Instagram stories, and I got 3,000 hits off of that. I don't know why I'm paying Instagram. I should just pay you to share stuff for me. I was like, okay, well, first of all, stop paying Instagram. Stop doing that. And also she's like, well, but I got this advice from these social media people. I'm like, okay, first of all, don't. Second of all, the social media guru that you're paying money towards to give you all this advice has 400 followers.
Yeah.
Stop right. it. Like, right. It's always like, oh, here's how the algorithm changed this month. You want to know how all these algorithms really work is consistency and authenticity. People can tell when you're putting on an act and that you're being kind of fake on social media, like when everything's a little too staged and a little too planned and a little too stuff, but it's just really consistency. Some other, you know, much bigger creator was like, social media, especially like after kind of last year when Instagram's whole thing got all effed, and you know, suddenly you post a photo and yesterday it would have gotten 70,000 likes and now it's getting 7. And they were trying to transition hard to video, but even that wasn't taking off at the time. He was like, social media is a great place to get discovered. It is not a great place to work. It's not a great place to rely on for money. Like the idea of the full-time like influencer, I think that's I think it's dying a death.
Oh yeah.
Which is good. I'm happy about that. Yeah. I'm not mad at that, but like, it's just, okay. So I've got 400,000 followers across socials. Cool. That's nothing. And it's not, it doesn't mean anything. I don't get a paycheck from that.
Yeah, the only thing that you can rely on with the algorithm is like that you have to consistently post, but what you can definitely count on is that it will be consistently inconsistent with how many people it shows your content to. And like,
so you just have to put it out there.
But it's so I think about it all the time. Like it's so crazy because it's like it's not like when people used to be making TV shows and the show would get canceled or picked up based on how many people tuned in. Because it's not this. It's like this is like if you were, let's say, you were a writer on Friends, and you're like, this episode that I wrote, that I spent, we worked really hard on, the cast, everyone worked just as hard on it. 15 million people tuned in to watch this episode, and then very next week on Thursday night, it's Thursday night NBC. Everybody's tuning in for whatever reason. 3,000 people watch the show the next Thursday night, and it's like, why? And you're like, but we worked just as hard on this episode, and then like whoever wrote that episode's like, oh my god, like I wrote that episode. Like what's wrong with my episode? It's just like. Yeah. For whatever reason, the algorithm of TV that week was just like, we're not going to tell anyone that the show's on this week.
Yeah.
We're not going to, no one's going to know that the show's on this week.
And what's hilarious is like, people will get in my comments and be like, where have you been all this time? I'm like, I have had a podcast since 2009. I have been on social media for a very long time. I have no idea why the math problem decided this January that suddenly everybody was going to know who I was. But like, I've been on this upward trajectory this year and I'm not mad about it. It certainly opened a lot of doors and put me in a lot of new rooms, but like, it's also fickle. And you really just kind of have to do it until it just suddenly, maybe your number is going to get picked and maybe, you know, take advantage of it if it does. Try to meet the road as it rises before you.
You're doing what I think you you're supposed to do, which is you're not like sitting around and waiting. You're being proactive about like writing the books and doing the work. And I think that's great. What are your books called that people can look for if they want to read something by you?
My last collection of poetry. So I had two books of poetry and one nonfiction. The last collection of poetry is called While I Wait to Be a God Again. I have another book. I'm actually going to give this one away. It's called The Dabbler's Guide to Witchcraft, which was not the title that I chose, but that's the title that Simon & Schuster picked. Okay. That's the book for people who consider themselves spiritual but not religious, and kind of how they're inventing their own spiritual path and all of kind of the pitfalls that they find along the way. It talks about cultural appropriation versus cultural appreciation. It talks about how to spot a fraud, how to spot when somebody's trying to do a Barnum stuff on you. It talks about the ethics of the crystal mining industry and all of that. So it's packaged as a book about witchy stuff for Halloween, and then you open it up and it's actually a book about ethics and sociology. And I'm like, ha ha, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's cool. Amazing.
Yeah, and then I have three more coming out, another collection of poetry. Wow. I have a nonfiction book about death that I've been investigating for the last 2 years, kind of all about the new kinds of conversations that we're having about death, the way that we are reclaiming our right to die. And then I have my debut novel coming out, and I'm really excited about that because that is my sort of foray into fun fiction. And it's the only teaser that I am allowed to give until all of the ink is dotted, is that it's basically Kiki's Delivery Service meets the Old Gods of Appalachia. And I'm very excited. Yeah, I'm very excited about what things are going to happen with that. So that's, I'm having a meeting with my agent on Friday about that one. So I'm very pumped.
So cool. And the name of your podcast again is?
Head on Fire. It comes from the phrase, to seek illumination like a man with his head on fire seeks water. It's all about talking to experts in overlooked or misunderstood fields that people have either never considered, like a job that people didn't even realize was a job. Like I've talked to a bat expert earlier this year, PhD in bats, a job that people think they already know everything about, like a pop singer, what the reality of those jobs are and the work that those people do. I'm just very curious about people. So I made a podcast so I could talk to people.
Fantastic. I love it. I loved talking with you today, Don. Thank you so much for making the time. And hopefully I'll talk to you.
Stay wildly unreasonable. Ha ha.
Stay wildly unreasonable out there. Yeah, I love it. Okay. Thanks, Don. Bye bye.
Bye.
So yeah, as we mentioned in there, Don is a published author. I forgot to say that at the beginning, but yeah, you should check out his books, absolutely, and check him out on social media. I think you get the gist of the argument, right? That like the actual twist of the episode is that it's really the people asking for marginalized people and oppressed people to behave in a quote unquote reasonable way. It's really those people who are actually behaving in an unreasonable way. That's also the conclusion of my YouTube video. So that's sort of the spoiler. Like you already kind of get what I'm trying to say with this whole topic, but I still think it's a worthwhile watch if you want to check out that YouTube video. Again, it's called The Nauseating Respectability Politics of Conservatives. And it's about this topic that we just covered on this show. But yeah, Don's a delight, and I'm happy to have him as a new friend. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. We'll see you next week. Faux show. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com, austinarchermusic.com, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, or by looking up Austin Archer on Spotify or Apple Music. Patreon.com/AustinArcher is a thing that you can go and join and donate to if you would like to help keep this show alive. Thank you so much to all of the patrons that are there, that are contributing to the content that I make and to this show. Appreciate you so much. Love you so much. Genuinely, from the bottom of my heart. Okay, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. We'll see you next week. Love you so much. Bye-bye. The less I know about